Welcome to What Not to Do. I'm Kyle Schmitz, and this is episode 104. We are back, part two, Tuesday, with Miha Matlievsky, the fail coach himself, and he's got a powerful message for you today. A couch commentator is not cultural change. A couch, a Facebook, whatever you're on. You're going to love this conversation. Hold tight. We'll be right back.
Good men learn from their own mistakes, but great men learn from the mistakes of others. What Not to Do gives entrepreneurs a platform to share their failures to help equip you for success. We break the silence on failure, we demystify failure, and we help you overcome the fear of failure. So, still not sure what to do? Start with what not to do, because hindsight is 20/20.
I love how you broke down failure in those three parts. It's either wrong goals, either wrong steps that people are taking, or there's some sort of bottleneck in the process. Really, really hopeful. Okay, so let's do this. Let's have you share one of your favorite failures with us, and I'll let you unpack the story and kind of draw it out, and then we'll go back and we'll do a bit of a retrospective on it and take it apart from there. But so, Miha, what's one of your favorite failures that you want to share with us today?
Well, I mean, there's just so many of them, but you know, maybe we can stick with the big one with the losing of everything back in 2009. And I mean, you know, it was a whole lot of different things that that I didn't do prior to that failure happened, you know, that I wasn't mindful of. But the biggest problem why that happened, why I lost everything just so overnight was, you know, the Three Little Pigs story, you know, the bad wolf and the three little pigs, where, you know, when times are good and, you know, 2005, 6, 7, 8 were really good times in Europe, similar to 2018, 19, you know, everything was going up, real estate up, shares up, people buying everything like crazy. It was good times. In good times, you don't need strong foundations, you know. When you're building a house, you need strong foundations for earthquakes and rains and water and all of those things. And the same goes in your business. If you don't have strong foundations, you can grow, you can scale in good times because, you know, you're just riding that good wave of the good macroeconomic situation. Well, my problem was that I never laid out any of the foundations. And so when the crisis came, all of that fell apart like a house of cards, like a domino effect. All my companies were tied together. You know, nowadays, I would make sure that I have asset protection in place, you know, and proper structuring of my businesses. But back then, I had none of that. You know, I was signing huge deals, huge agreements, and I saw that a lawyer is a cost, not an investment into a safer future. Nowadays, that there's like literally not a single document leaving my company without the blessing of our advisor. Whenever I try to do anything that will have any financial implications, I don't do anything without our tax and asset protection advisor giving his blessing. You know, and those are all foundations that I overlooked back then. And you know, when the bank came in, they had an easy way to just take everything. And you know, I like literally in that one single day, everything was taken away from me. My businesses then went into bankruptcy, all of them. I then got divorced because of all of that, and yeah, I was just all alone in the whole world, and trying to figure out what to do next. And instead of owing money to one bank, which would be the case if I would have, you know, the proper protection in place, the bank actually took all the money from all my other businesses. And in those businesses, I wasn't able to pay employees to pay suppliers. So I ended up owing money to hundreds of people and small businesses, which was much more devastating for me mentally and emotionally. You know, I wasn't somebody who would intentionally kill a company. I really went into that with all my heart and soul. And so it was really devastating to know that people who depend on me and I can't do shit about it. And the bank, the big bank, I mean, you know, yes, of course, it wasn't my money. It was their money. They have to get it back. But that bank would, you know, survive. And some of those were struggling so hard because of what happened. And yeah, that was also killing me. And all that pressure and all of that, it was just hard. And so, you know, you go into more and more depression, more and more anxiety, more and more stress. That darkness starts creeping in. You stop seeing those things as failures, but you internalize that you are a failure. Mm. I started believing that this is it. This is for the rest of my life. This is how my life will be. Eating potatoes and rotted. Yeah, that darkness comes into you. Your head is a roller coaster and a nuclear bomb we're getting ready to explode. You want some silence. You have no silence. You can't be by yourself. You can't be outside. It's just crazy. And then, you know, you start thinking, you know, what's this even worth going on? And then you start Googling ideas for suicide. And like the whole thing really hit me because, you know, they didn't took everything on the same day. They were taking my cars. They were taking my this, that, you know, like little by little. And the last thing that I had left was the apartment I was living in. And when I got that notice that it will be taken away in a few days, I just cracked. And, you know, I was on the balcony smoking a cigarette and I just climbed on the other side of the fence. And then, you know, with one hand holding myself, looking down. So yeah, that was kind of like the darkest moment. But then the thing was when I looked down and, you know, how I said, you know, will I do this correctly? That triggered something. You know, it triggered this almost like Micha splitting into two little Michas, you know, the devil and the angel on each shoulder. And the angel was shouting at the devil. And I was actually speaking pretty loudly out loud. So the neighbors were even hearing me. And, you know, I used a lot of very juicy words, so I'm not going to, you know, you didn't do this. You chose this project and it was all you. You know, when the crisis came, it was so easy to find blame outside of you. Same as now, you know, it's Corona. It's this, it's that, you know, like what can I do? It's the pandemic, you know, it's so easy to find something to blame outside of you. And I'm not saying that, you know, sometimes things outside of you might not be, you know, at fault. But the thing is, if you blame things outside, then you put yourself into a passive state of mind and it's really nothing you can do until that thing changes, you know. But if you take what I call extreme ownership, and that's what happened to me in that moment, it was like, oh shit, I did all of those things. It's all my fault. Even if it wasn't completely. But the thing was that my next thought was, well, if I did it once with all those mistakes, if I now change, do things differently, better, learn new stuff, I can do it again and I can do even bigger and better. And that was that little ray of light that I needed. And then I climbed back in and I made a huge list of everything I can do. So, you know, shifting your focus to what can I do with what I have? And so often I hear entrepreneurs, you know, oh, but I would start this, but I don't have that and that and that. I mean, you know, yes, one day I want to have this huge organization taking care of animals. But if I wait until then, I will probably never do anything. You know, and I would just be the couch commentator on Facebook. Oh, another dog, something happened. Oh, poor dog. But that ain't going to do shit to anybody. So, you know, I do what I can. Right now, I can't do all of the things that I want because we're talking about millions of US dollars to get all those things up and running. But I still do what I can, you know, and every day I try to do a bit more.
Yeah, I love it.
So that's my favorite failure, because everything, you know, everything, who I am today, what I do today, what I stand for, it all comes from that failure. And I want to make sure to really emphasize, being the fail coach doesn't mean that I've mastered the failure to the point where I don't fail anymore. That would be crazy wrong. I fail a whole lot. Every day, probably, I fail at something. It's the attitude. It's the foundations. I can measure things. I can respond quicker. I can see problems quicker. And I move forward. Fail fast. Fail forward.
Yeah.
I don't attach negative emotions and negative self-talk when those things happen. I go immediately to, okay, what can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? What can I do? What can I do differently next time, tomorrow, to be better, do better?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's powerful. So I've got to ask, where did the dog come in at when you hit rock bottom?
It was a bit later. So the suicide attempt and then the aha moment, and then everything I had in my head was how to get out of debt, how to solve that.
Yeah.
And so I was burning myself up. I wasn't looking after, like, my only priority in my life was that. And then it was at the end of 2012, so 2 years later after the suicide attempt. And, you know, I kind of fancied a lady. And she was involved in all this animal rescue, vegan lifestyle and all of that. And, you know, she was always posting on her Facebook pictures of dogs that need to, you know, be adopted. And I thought, you know, if I adopt a dog, then, you know, she will probably come more often to visit us and so on. So my intention wasn't, but, you know, that didn't happen. But I did adopt the dog, happy. I felt so much in love with him. It's really just crazy that the bond that we have between us, and like, he's just the most wonderful thing I've ever seen. Like, his eyes and just the way, like, it's just, I don't know, like, he knows everything. And so after I had this dog for a few months, we were on a walk, and we were coming back home, and I had this super long leash on which he was. And before I was able to even jump, he saw a piece of pizza lying there on the street for probably a few days, and he went for it, and, you know, he, like, just gulped it down, like, in one piece. And I started yelling, you know, like, I buy all the best food, I cook you steaks and I don't know what, and you go and you eat this and you'll have diarrhea again, because his stomach is, well, you know, mostly dogs have very good stomachs, but, like, if he eats something outside of his regular diet, he'll have diarrhea. And so I was just yelling there at him, you know, like, and then it hit me. Wait a minute. I cook for him. I do this. I do that. But what do I do for myself? I constantly just order pizza and burgers and you know, like, nothing, because I'm just focused on work. And I realized that I actually love that little ball of fur more than I love myself. But then, you know, I often have these monologues happening in my head. I mean, it's a strange thing, but. As we were walking, this monologue was happening in my head, and I was, but wait a minute, like, he's a mix. Those mixes, they live for so long. And if I die on such a poor diet and so on, like, what will happen with him? You know, like, and so out of love for him, I started taking better care of myself, not just being focused on the business, really, you know, the circle of life thing, where you cut that pizza on 8 pieces, and then you have family, friends, finances, spirituality. I started doing a whole lot on this, like meditations, morning routines, evening routines, more walks in the nature, and so on. And with time, I actually started falling in love back with myself. But if it wasn't for him, you know, so that was after the suicide attempt. But the way I was living, with my sole intent to solve that financial problem, I would just end up with a heart attack or something. So I'm honestly not sure I would still be here. So he made this huge, huge foundational change in me. I mean, I did it because of him.
Yeah. And that's so powerful. It's amazing. Like, I think one of the temptations within failure is to get really introspective and to kind of get obsessed with ourselves internally. And it's amazing how sometimes we just need something or someone to get us outside of our own heads, to get us to look out from ourselves. And it seems like that's what this dog Happy did for you. And it's actually really cool. So in caring for this dog, it helped to get you outside of yourself. And then even to see yourself in a better perspective that you couldn't see before, that you, yeah. Cause we can't see ourselves rightly, like to know thyself, right? We can't be self-aware if we don't see ourselves rightly. And we have a hard time seeing ourselves rightly if our head is up our own butts, you know what I'm saying? And so have something to draw us out from ourselves, then we can actually look back and be like, oh man, like in your case, man, I'm not even caring for myself. I'm caring for this dog better than I'm caring for myself. And it's amazing. The other thing, I see something really kind of cool. We talked earlier about, you know, you moving from success to significance. So you having, you know, achieved entrepreneurial success, and now you're helping to reproduce that within other entrepreneurs. Really, really cool. There's a similar theme here, except I think it has to do with happiness. You know, caring for this dog actually brought about a whole bunch of happiness and joy and satisfaction for you. And what you're doing on a larger scale with the animal rescue and setting up the trust help with that is you're reproducing what you experience on a personal level, and that you can hope that you can help to reproduce in lives of however many hundreds or thousands of people and animals, which is just really, really cool. Have you ever kind of thought about like the two parallels like that before, between entrepreneurship and the animal rescue?
Well, somebody, another podcast host a few months ago pointed out to me like that I kind of tend to navigate toward, you know, those sad stories, adversity, and really the more the rescue part. So even when I look at my clients, most of my clients, they aren't, you know, fresh from college, just, you know, easy life. Usually they come from huge adversity. They've tried a lot. They weren't successful. They didn't have the guidance, the support that they needed, and so on. So, I don't know. I mean, I just can't help myself. I mean, my girlfriend, when we started dating, you know, she wasn't used to what I do and how I do. Like, she's a chef at a small restaurant. Like, she's completely out of the life that I'm living. And she was like, why do you do all of this? Like, why do you have to do all these things? And I said, it's just bigger than me. You know, every time I go on a stage, I have this inner monologue, like, why do I put myself through this? I mean, if you've ever been on a stage, you know how frightening it is. I mean, a few minutes before you actually have to go on the stage, you're shaking uncontrollably. You think you're going to pee in your pants. You are all sweaty. I mean, it's not a very enjoyable thing. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I guess if you do it every day, then it's different. But if you just do that 2-3 times a year, you know, it's not a good feeling. And every single time I ask myself, why don't I just turn around and just run like Forrest Gump? But at the end of the day, I always go there and I do me. And I don't know, I know it might sound strange, because it's even strange to me saying that, but it's almost like I'm no longer, like nothing in my life is no longer about me. I had everything. It didn't really, like the material stuff was just leaving me a lot empty. Mm. I really couldn't care about that anymore. And it's really just as if I'm a tool in, I don't know, somebody's hand to do something. And I just have to do these things. I mean, honestly, all this coaching. I don't need that. You know, it's not like I take home any of that money. It just goes towards the fund. You know, so why? And yeah, I just can't help it. I just can't help it.
Mm, I love it. I loved how you said, I'm just a tool. Well, I loved how you said, it's just bigger than me. It's not about me. And I'm really just a tool in somebody's hands. And man, what a great place to be, right? Like in life where we can just, you know.
Well, sometimes, you know, I would want to be more, you know, about me, you know, sometimes. Because if I have a choice to do something for me personally or do something for somebody, I will always choose that. And sometimes, you know, I'm like, well, you know, can I don't know, just do something that's, you know, and I have to be really mindful because, like, my girlfriend, she, you know, I really have to be more mindful to have some time for the family as well. But yeah, just this feeling, I don't know, I guess you get hooked up, like, you know, entrepreneurs that get hooked up on cocaine, you get hooked up on helping others, you know, and it's just such an amazing, wonderful, warm, fuzzy feeling when you hear those stories, and especially the ones that come from huge adversity. I don't know. It's just so hard to explain it. Often I don't even understand myself, you know. I mean, it would be so much easier to just, you know, make a company. I mean, I live in Serbia. Serbia is Eastern Europe. You have like this hugely qualified people living here. They work for $200-$400 per month. I could easily create a VA agency, marketing agency, project management agency, software company, like whatever, you know, I mean, and just package that and sell that to, you know, Americans, Australians, Canadians, you know. It would be just so easy. And I wouldn't have to deal with any of this, you know, going on podcasts, on stages, coaching, like none of that. But yeah. I just can't help myself. It's not like, again, even, you know, being your guest, it's not me, you know, my ego suffering because I have to share my story. I want people to know what I did or any of that. No, it's really all about, is there somebody in your audience who needs to hear this? And if I don't do it, and if they don't hear it, what if they do what I almost did? Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's, yeah, just, I can't help it. Mm-hmm. That's the best explanation.
Yeah, how many people that are listening are in that spot that you were, you know, only holding on to the balcony with one hand, leaning over the edge, right? Looking down and considering and weighing their options. And how, if you kept that all to yourself, you know, the opportunity cost of how many lives that you could actually impact, right? You could save, you could help, right? It's really, really powerful, man.
I was blessed with this amazing lessons. Mm-hmm. No, they weren't easy, but I really, really learned a lot from them. I needed them. I really needed them. And if I would solve everything in 3 months, I would not learn anything. So that's why I know why it took so time. I understand that. And, you know, there's just so much that anybody can learn from that. And, you know, to keep that story hidden, I think that would be selfish. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, I have a little bit of a hard time properly expressing myself in English language because English is only my third language, and you know, I still struggle sometimes with a little bit with vocabulary, trying to find the right words and so on. But I hope, you know, sometimes it's I can't even explain things to myself, so it's sometimes hard to find all the right words. So I'm hoping that your audience and you is you know, getting the message across what I'm trying to say.
Oh man, it's coming through loud and clear, brother. You're doing a great job, and yeah, it's awesome.
Powerful stuff from Miha Matlievsky. Okay, so let's recap what he told us not to do. And I think what we can do is just take the lessons that he gave us and invert them. So check this out. First of all, Miha said to keep his story hidden would be selfish. Right? To keep a story hidden would be selfish. So here we go. Don't keep your story hidden. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to go on some kind of soap opera, you know, spree and tell everyone about your story and all kind of stuff. That's not the point. The point is to share it where it mean, where it's meaningful and to be wise about that, but don't keep it hidden, right? Everyone has an amazing story. That's actually one of the things I love about what not to do. I've interviewed folks that have been all over on the entrepreneurial spectrum, either, you know, on their, you know, fourth, fifth, 100th business, right? Or just starting out. It's amazing because everyone has an amazing story, right? It's just a matter about uncovering it, just a matter about drawing it out, just a matter about, you know, dusting it off. And so if you feel insecure, like, well, you know, what do I really have to offer? The answer is a whole heck of a lot. Don't keep your story hidden. Next. Don't be a couch commentator, right? Don't be a couch commentator. And here's a lesson that Miha said. A couch commentator is not cultural change. It's just not cultural change, right? I've done this before, you know, Monday morning quarterback type of thing. I know better than the Packers, or they should have done this, or why does Rodgers hold on to the ball so long? And it's so easy for us to, like, you know, just run the mouth. And yet we've never been there. We've never coached. We've never been on the field, you know, and I'm not talking about like our high school glory days, right? I'm talking about like real, you know, battle, real life, getting out there, right? And yet we have a whole slew of opinions to say about it, right? So in one sense, while we shouldn't keep our story hidden, we probably need to, you know, keep our comments to ourselves here. Being a couch commentator is not cultural change. Actually getting in the game is, right? Get in the game. Get off the couch and get in the game. All right, next. Don't think that, how would I say this? The lesson is it's just bigger than me, right? And that's what Miha realizes. He realizes that life, what's going on, it's just so much bigger than him, right? It has not to be about him. So maybe the way to say it is, don't think the world revolves around you, right? There's so much more that's happening, right? You aren't the epicenter of all things. And even your story, is a, you know, it's a micro thread in such a greater story, right? And so while in some sense we tend to view ourselves as the hero of our own stories and, oh my gosh, and the world is about me, man, you know what? It's good to get outside of ourselves and realize, oh my gosh, it's so much not about me. One of my favorite quotes comes from a guy, I think his name is John Muir, and he said this. He said, "The outside of a mountain is good for the inside of the man." So if you're feeling proud, if you're feeling big, if you're feeling like, man, the world just revolves around me, how great I am, I got some homework for you. Go look at a mountain, right? And then tell me how big you feel, right? Go climb and summit and scale all the way to the apex of that mountain. Then tell me how big, you know, how big you feel, right? It's good to be reminded. And I think this is one of the built-in features of the world in which we live. It's good to be reminded how small we are, right? And that's good. It doesn't mean that we're not capable of things, right? This isn't odds at that. It is a way to help to counteract and deflate the ego that can so easily creep up on us, especially when success comes, especially when, and you've heard this from other folks on the show where, you know, we start believing our own hype. Oh, Kyle this, oh, Kyle that, or whoever you are, whoever's whispering in your ear, like, oh, all that kind of stuff. It's so easy to start to believe it. And guess what? That usually precipitates the fall. All right. So good stuff. What else here? I've got such a full page of notes here from Miha. Don't neglect yourself, right? That's important, that, you know, if you can't give what you don't have, right? So don't neglect yourself, the energy, the time, the care. That's really, really important. Something that we want to do when we are go-givers. Oftentimes we can forget to give to ourselves. And again, we can't give what we don't have, right? Don't neglect time. You know, and your resources. Don't think that you can't do more than what you can. So the question is what can you do with what you have, right? I think that's what Miha poses the question. Don't let someone else assume ownership. It's not whether or not something will be owned. It's the question is who's going to own it, right? And if it's you, you do not want someone else owning you. That's called slavery, right? So take extreme ownership of yourself, right? Be your own master. Reach a level of self-mastery. Otherwise, someone will find mastery over you, right? You'll be enslaved to an employer the rest of your life or to the government or to whatever it might be. Someone else is not your savior, right? The government is not your savior. Your employer is not your savior. You need to take full ownership, extreme ownership of your life. And that's really, really, really important. And last but not least here, don't neglect foundations. Don't neglect foundations. I'm a big fan of saying foundations matter. Build strong. In our you know, practical, just get it done culture, we want to, you know, really kind of blow through the foundation, be like, well, that's not the fun work. That's really kind of, you know, whatever. It's just like, let's just get to building and decorating and all that kind of stuff. Like, look here, if you don't have a great foundation, the whole thing's going to come down, right? It's better to slow down so you can speed up. It's better to take the time to lay really strong foundations so that you can actually build something that will last. Built to last, baby. Jim Collins, come on. So foundations matter. Build strong. That's super, super important. Don't neglect laying strong foundations. Take the time to do that. Well, if this conversation has been encouraging to you, as it has been to me, share it with a friend, share it with your coworkers, share it with your family, your kiddos, depending on what age of the spectrum they're at. Or you can even start to talk about these things, implement them in your parenting. We certainly do at our place, at our house. And another place you can help to get these stories out, stories like Mia's, is wherever you listen, Spotify, iTunes. A lot of you folks listen on Apple Podcasts, which is awesome. But if you're elsewhere, you know, leave us a review wherever you listen. That can be really helpful to us to get these stories out. It's not so much about Kyle as it is about the stories that are being told in this podcast, and those stories have the power to change lives. And so it's fine that if you want to give me 5 stars, but really, I hope what we're doing here is really to highlight these stories and to share them so that we can be better men, better women because of it. Well, it's been said that good men learn from their own mistakes, but great men, they learn from the mistakes of others. So go and be great, and we'll see you next time.